Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown. And the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
This hour is brought to you by JulieBeforeYouDig.com.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
What have you learned about him the last two and a half months?
I would say how competitive he is. He is highly competitive, and I love that. And he brings just a lot of energy to the building. Always enthusiastic, always looking to, you know, find ways to create an edge for a football team. And that excitement, you know, really gets into our draft room, which is where we do free agency too. And we are actively searching to give, you know, this staff everything that they need to be successful. So that energy and that competitive attitude that he brings has been really, really nice for the entire building.
That was our guest who joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Lou Kanellis, main sports anchor at Fox 32, which is one of the stations that is the Bears station. Marshall and I know it well. He was at the Breakers in Palm Beach and did a lot of work for Fox when it came to reporting on the Bears. Lou Kanellis, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Layla, how are you? What's going on?
We're good. And while I have you here, since Marshall and I are people about town and restaurant-consuming individuals, you've got an update on Avli, and then you have a new place, right? I figured I would ask.
No new places yet, but we were blessed to have Marshall Harris walk through our doors at our River North location a couple of weeks ago. So always great to have Marshall, and we greeted him the only way Marshall Harris expects to be greeted, and that's with plenty of alcohol.
Yes!
Yeah, it was an interesting evening, and I appreciate the hospitality, Lou. He does a good job. He and his staff are about their business, if you get my drift.
it is a good spot. Avli on the Park is a personal favorite of mine, and that is, you didn't pay us to say that. We are saying that because we love the joints, and we love the restaurants, and you know that. Pataki, though. Pataki's the new place, isn't it?
Well, it was, but I already sold it.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, sold it. thank you. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You're on the hustle out here. I stand corrected. That's great.
That's okay.
All of that said, you were also on the hustle in Florida. You were everywhere when it came to talking to the Bears. I feel like you and Cassie Carlson have done such a great job in a lot of the side sessions that we've seen recently where ownership has spoken or where Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson has spoken. We've played some of the stuff that Cassie has gotten in these that I think is really key and is great reporting. What were your main takeaways from some of those side conversations that you had with the most important people with the Bears?
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know where to start, Layla, because one of the benefits of covering the NFL owners' meetings is there's just a handful of reporters here. And in the Bears' case, you know, six, seven, eight main reporters like Dan Weider, Patrick Finley, Jeff Joniak, Adam Johns, Adam Hogue. So there aren't that many that you're fighting with to get the story to stick your microphone in and, you know, potentially maybe get something that's a little bit of a shocker. I had the opportunity, and I don't care what you say, we are your home of the Bears, Fox 32 Chicago, and we had the opportunity to sit down one-on-one with Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles, George McCaskey, and Kevin Warren over the last 4 days here in Palm Beach. What did I learn? I learned that everyone on this in this franchise loves Ben Johnson. You know, sometimes you wonder if it's buyer's remorse. Did we bring in the right guy? He's been around for 2.5 months now. He's been part of meetings. Was he different in the interview setting than he was now that we're working alongside him? These guys love this guy. I mean, the energy, the enthusiasm, the intensity that he has brought to Hallis Hall, which these players are going to feel starting on Monday when they start their camp, is exactly what Kevin Warren and Ryan Poles, and to an extent George McCaskey, were looking for. Are they then going to put someone like Caleb Williams in a bit of an uncomfortable position, and that means under center more than out of the shotgun? You betcha. Obviously, the news today was about the stadium, and instead of it being 100% focused on let's take advantage of the most incredible, beautiful lakefront in the world that Kevin Warren has referenced in the past, now it's, hey, you know what? We got those tax benefits. Arlington Heights, isn't all that bad. So I wasn't surprised with that. And it was just great to get together with George because George, usually you get to talk to him once a year, and it's typically at the NFL owners meetings. So I love talking to George because whether you like him or not, and I think he's a terrific man. I go way back with George when George was the ticket manager for the Bears. He shoots you straight. There's no gray area with George. You may not like what he has to say, but he's very honest with the media, and I respect that.
We know that you were one of the people who in the past has talked about wanting to keep the Bears in the city as far as playing, but you mentioned it. I mean, I've all along said it's going to be Arlington Heights. I don't understand financially why it wouldn't be. Do you feel like that shift, you said you weren't surprised by it, the timing surprise at all? And do you still maintain that the Bears should try to stay in the city of Chicago?
Let me be on record as saying I'm crushed that they won't continue to play on the lakefront. And I know no decision's been made. I have changed my tune. I thought for sure they'd be able to work out something with the city, with Springfield, with Friends of the Park, and keep it on the lakefront. Then I thought, maybe there's an opportunity to work out something with the Michael Reese space. Now, I think it's Arlington Heights, without question. Hmm. So, I understand the benefits. Listen, they spent $197 million. They've got 326 acres in Arlington Heights, and they can build Bearstown. I get all the benefits. I really do, Marshall. Stadium, I flat out asked Kevin Warren, because since I've talked to Kevin last, I found out, did some digging, and realized that most of your NFL teams that pay for their own stadium, that get no help from the government, decide not to put the roof on, right? San Francisco 49ers, I mean, I could go down the list, because they decide that if it's $1 billion of our money not to mention what it's going to cost you to maintain that roof throughout the year, that they decide it's not worth it. So I looked Kevin in the eye today, and I said, are you still committed to a fixed roof on the new stadium, whether it's in Arlington Heights or it's on the lakefront? And he said, absolutely, because of all the other benefits, bringing potentially a Final Four, Big Ten championship, Coldplay rock concert, WrestleMania, you name it. They find that the value, that the return on investment is there to keep the rooftop as part of the stadium. But to answer your question, Marshall, yeah, I think it's me personally. Again, every time I tried to say, well, the focus has now shifted to Arlington Heights, they said, no, it hasn't. The focus was on Museum Park. Now it's on both. So I know that they're looking at both still, but Lou Kanellis feels that it's probably going to end up in Arlington Heights.
No, I'm with you, Lou. I think Marshall and I both feel that way. It's where they have the land. It's what they've purchased. But I knew you were an advocate and a big understander when it came to the importance of also having something in the city on the lakefront. So we wanted to give you that space. Also, going back to George McCaskey, you know, I think about how happy he was after the Ben Johnson press conference and how he really got to kind of be himself, which is a fan. You know, we know that about George. And that's him being his most comfortable self, I feel like. He got to have some fun, make some jokes, which everybody should be able to do in a good time. And he got to really just enjoy the moments. You know, they spent the money on the guy. They got to have the person they wanted coaching their team, and he got to enjoy it. And it was stark to hear him understandably speak today when it came to discussing what's next for his family, what's next for him as chairman, and how the Bears move forward now that Virginia has passed.
It was moving. It really was moving for me because, you know, fans out there have their opinions. I don't agree with them. He made it clear to me that there's no interest in selling the team, that his mother, before her passing, had put together a succession plan that was agreed to with the NFL. And the succession plan involves the McCaskey family owning the Bears for the next 100 years. And that's the playbook she put together, as he referenced. She coached them up, and now they're going to go execute the plan. And knowing Virginia McCaskey, that plan also included going out and winning Super Bowls. And, you know, you talked about his excitement with the Ben Johnson hiring. I felt it this morning, Layla, when I talked to him. He talked about going into the weight room and seeing this guy and how fired up he is and intense. And there's just an appreciation. He's, you know, people always talk about how smart he is and respectful he is to the rest of the staff. And, you know, in my dealings with him, and they haven't been many. Cassie's had the opportunity to sit down with him a few more times than I have. But the guy looks you in the eye and you're buying what he's selling. You look at him, you talk to him, and I feel like, hey, this guy's being honest with me. I may not agree with everything he's saying, but he's shooting me straight.
Lou, what do you think the leash, for lack of a better word, is on Ryan Poles, and as he continues this turnaround, this reset, if not a rebuild, with a new head coach and then obviously new parts in place when you talk about the offensive line, the defensive line, and as we get ready for the draft? Because we're trying to figure out, because, you know, Kevin Warren says we don't talk about contracts and the lengths of contracts, but we're trying to figure out how much room he has here, how much room for margin for error, if you will, he has here as he works with Ben Johnson into next season.
Well, in defense of Ryan, this was his coach, right? He was able to put together a thoughtful, timely coaching search, all right? Whether you like the fact that they had 21 names on the list or not, they, you know, they really vetted through the process, and I feel they nailed it. Obviously, they got the guy that they wanted all along. You talk to Kevin Warren, Kevin will tell you that 10 minutes into the interview with Ben Johnson, he knew that they had their guy. And in Ryan's case, you know, this is his guy. He's going to hitch his wagon to this guy. And, I don't know who to believe, but, you know, I was told that when Ryan took the job as GM, they basically said, the franchise said, here are the three candidates, pick one of the three. Oh, okay. And it was, you know, his first chance, Marshall, to be a GM, so he wasn't going to push back this time. And kudos to Kevin Warren for giving him the opportunity to go out and find his head coach and go through another draft and go spend money. I mean, for the first time since he's been GM, Marshall, they spent money in free agency. It wasn't about, oh, my God, look at the mess I have to clean up from Ryan Pace. This is about, all right, the mess is cleaned. I've got tons of cap room. Boy, I got lucky with that trade, so I've got draft capital now. Now I can build my team. So how long does that make his, you know, since, you know, his contract situation as a private team matter? My guess is, you know, this is his guy. And if it works with Ben Johnson, then and they win, a few playoff games and maybe an NFC championship and go to a Super Bowl, well, he's going to buy himself a lot of time on his next contract.
I even think if they have a winning season, given the trend you just described, even just a winning season, he earns an extension. Just based on that alone.
No question.
But I just didn't think he was there yet.
I think he's been, and I know nothing. I think he's already been given an extension, because if I was Ben Johnson and I had my pick of the litter and I was the belle of the ball, I'd want to make sure that the guy I just interviewed with, who I'm buying into what he's telling me and selling me on what the future of the team is, I'd like to make sure he's going to be around a little bit longer than just, oh my gosh, if we go from 5-12 to 7-10, he's going to leave. I think that Ryan's going to be here for the next 3 years. Give him a chance, see what happens with the guys that he made the trades for. Some of these guys are veterans, 32 years old. How long is Tooney going to be around? I know Jonah Jackson got the extra year on the contract. But let me just transition to what I think they're going to do with the number 10 pick. I had someone in Detroit tell me, expect the unexpected from Ben Johnson. If a guy like Genty's there at 10, he's going to grab him after what Gibbs has given him for the last 2 years, being a Pro Bowler. If they can get Tyler Warren and he can run his two tight end sets 70% of the time, they may grab him. But if both guys aren't there, left tackle, left tackle, left tackle. What Poles said was, hey, maybe the guy we draft doesn't start right away. So we'll see.
Yeah, it seems like there's going to be some type of competition likely at left tackle. And they look good across the line otherwise, so I could see that. I was going to ask you what your biggest takeaway was concerning the draft, but that's a pretty good insight there. What do you think about the way they talked about that the next three picks after number 10 and how those guys could be contributors year one as opposed to guys who sit and wait? Although depth is the name of the game, right? That's something we've learned over the last, 5 years or so with this particular iteration with the Bears, is depth is the thing they've been lacking.
Oh, totally. They've had no depth. And, on defense especially, and Matt Eberflus used to talk about it, he'd want to rotate his guys up front, and he just didn't have the talent. So to answer your question, Marshall, I asked Ryan Poles. Well, first I asked Ben Johnson on Monday, if you can, because you've got four picks up amongst the top 72, if you can find three starters, is that great? Johnson's like, that would be terrific. Three starters are in, I use the term impact players. Yesterday, I asked Ryan Poles, if you can find three starters or impact players, would you be happy? He said, no, I want four. He wants four. So they think they can do a lot with those first four picks. Obviously, the depth at the running back position coming out of college is just ridiculous. So even if Genty's not there, it's not a lost cause. I'm not sold on. I asked Andy Reid about the arm length of
Will Campbell.
Will Campbell. Thank you very much. And Andy Reid, because he's always referenced about this, and obviously Poles was part of the Kansas City organization. Reid said it wasn't a big deal. I got a different feeling when I talked to Poles about it. Maybe it is more of an important part of drafting at that position than Andy Reid led on. But obviously, they're going to definitely need someone up front. Again, he admitted that Karan Amagaji, it was unfortunate that, you know, his first opportunity to get out there was that Minnesota game, and he wasn't ready and didn't have a chance to practice. So they're still going to give Karan an opportunity, and, you know, Braxton Jones has to come back off of the ankle surgery. So they need more help up front on the offensive line. And let me say this about the defensive line, Marshall and Layla. You look at what this team did, okay. Yeah, they increased their sack total last year to 40, middle of the pack in the NFL. But don't tell me that Montez Sweat, okay, is the next great pass rusher. He never has been. He had 12 and a half a couple of years ago. You look over the course of his career, this guy's a 6-7 sack a year guy. So they need another warlord up front to help him. And the main, you know, Jervon Dexter off to a great start last year, 4 sacks, first 5 games, 1 after those first 5 games. So he needs to play strong. They made some moves. They got Jarrett, got Adebango. We'll see.
And Lou, thank you for catching me on the terminology for what Fox calls themselves. I appreciate it. The home for the Bears. So we go with that. Thanks to you.
Well, that's me. That's what I say. I know the Bears have relationships with another network in the market too, but hey, we are everywhere, so I feel we are the ultimate home of the Bears.
And you carried Ben Johnson's press conference live, and you have Ann Heron, who we love, so that helps too.
Check, check, and check.
Yeah, Luke Canellis, and of course, thanks to you, Cassie Carlson and Tina Wynn as well. That is your Fox team. Thanks for joining us today on The Score.
Thanks so much, Lou.
What an honor. Thanks, guys.
Oh, are you kidding? This was great. Luke Canellis, and like we said, also one of the men behind the team that runs Ovaly, and they do a great job. They
Lou's
did not
my guy.
Pay me to say this. I don't get free stuff there. I like paying because it's good.
No,
I'm sorry. That's just the truth.
Yeah.
That's how it is. So Luke Canellis joining us from Florida.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
It shouldn't be easy. This should be hard. You know, the spring should be hard. Training camp should be hard. Anything worth doing is hard. So it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of effort. In particular, year one, we should not be comfortable as we're coming into the springtime. We're going to load these guys up. We're going to see what they can handle. We're going to fail. And that's okay. That's part of how you learn and how you grow and you get better. And so we're going to encourage that as a coaching staff. So nothing about this is about making it easier. So, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, Ben Johnson. He said that this morning at the NFL owners' meetings. He talked bright and early at 6:30 Central Time. So we brought a lot of it to you. If you missed a lot, it was in our 10 o'clock hour. You can go back on the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app to hear it. And then we also have a little bit more from Ben Johnson, because when he speaks, we are listening. Marshall Harris joining us from Sacramento as well. Marshall got to check out the Cubs opener there. If you missed that, that was at 11. And Ben Johnson gave us an insight into what his standards are for the team and what he expects to see, given that we've heard reports about him being somebody with a bit of a case of red arse, if you will, somebody who's known to be hard on his players. I'm interested to hear what he has to say, so let's check it out.
Is this going to be a team that's coached hard?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, listen.
What does that look like?
We're going to be very, very clear with what we want. Okay, the communication is going to be crystal clear. The structure is going to be there from day one. We're going to be organized, and then we're going to be consistent. And so if we fail to meet the mark, the players are going to know about it. And when we do meet the mark, the players are going to know about it. That's how the coaching staff is going to coach. That's the guys that we brought in, and I'm really encouraged with what I've seen so far from that guy.
Is there a more clear line between, because I know last year there was this player empowerment thing that obviously you want your players to be able to speak up on certain things. But does there need to be a more clear line between the coaches putting forth what needs to be done and the players kind of interacting?
Listen, I can't speak too much on what went on in the building last year, okay? Here's what I know. I know how we're going to operate. I feel really good about the vision that I have, that the coordinators are going to help employ here once the players get in, and what we're going to become. It's going to be Chicago Bear football moving forward.
I heard a little bit of I don't think Courtney Cronin meant a lot of shade when she said player empowerment, but she did have a point when it came to everybody speaking out. I don't think that happens, though, if you like what's going on in practice and you like what's going on a day-in, day-out basis, Marshall.
I think players are empowered more so than they've ever been in the history of professional sports. And I don't hate it, but also the coaches have to be in charge. They need to set the tone. They need to be the ones that the players are looking at, respecting. And I just don't think that Matt Eberflus had the respect. And I understand why Ben Johnson doesn't want to talk about last year.
Everything's
because
looking
he wasn't here.
Where it is in terms of good.
Yeah. So, like, I think the questions to Ben Johnson are fair, but his responses are also fair because he's like, I'm going to handle business. He let us know that in the introductory press conference. Now, I guess technically Matt Eberflus also had a similar tone in his introductory press conference. It's just how believable are these two guys in relation to each other? And for me, like Ben Johnson, everything he's saying, I'm like, all right, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. But also, again, I'm from Alabama originally, but I feel like maybe in a previous life, I grew up in Missouri because you got to show me. You got to show me. So I can't wait to see what happens, minicamp, OTAs, all the stuff beforehand to see if this stays the message throughout training camp and then to the very end into the regular season. And only time will tell that. You can feel some way about what you're hearing from Ben Johnson, what you're hearing from the players in relation to Ben Johnson. But only when you see the results on the field will it be believable for me and I'm sure a segment of the population.
Yeah, we have multiple months until that happens. So I'm going to try to see what I can see when it comes to what he's saying right now, too. And again, I go back to even his introductory press conference when he said there was an emphasis on accountability. And when he kept emphasizing it over and over again, we know that's something that was big in the Bears press conferences toward the end of the season and when Matt Eberflus talked about it as well. So it's clear that either there was some directive from top down or the players were echoing that as well. But we never really got an indication of where the word was being focused. Who are you talking about when you say that? So when you have the standards that you set for your team, who needs to be more buttoned up than maybe wasn't before that you want to see more out of in a day in and day out situation? We know that practice wasn't up to standards. That's been said multiple times. And then we saw what happened with training camp last year where Ryan Poles says some things that happened in training camp in the beginning of the season ended up causing issues during the regular season. More importantly, is there somebody to stop those issues from happening or point them out? What are the safeguards here when it comes to expectations versus what you're actually getting on the field?
I hate to say this, but I think we just got to go with it until something bad happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it is, right?
And so when I say that, I don't mean I'm wishing for something bad to happen, but nothing bad has happened in the message that we've been given. So it's hard to pick apart something that says, like, oh, I can't believe you said that, because that genuinely has not happened yet. And I think if we're authentically listening to the message that Ben Johnson's given us, then we have to admit that we are pleased with what he said, because, again, nothing bad has happened yet. I think we suffer from, we're so used to bad things happening when we talk about the Bears, right? At least in my time in this, I've been here for 3.5 years. My time here, there have been positive moments, but it's been a lull for most of the time I've been here, mired with bad things and how things have gone wrong and how things aren't good enough. Right now, there's nothing to point out and say, this isn't good enough. Number one, because we don't even know what the final roster looks like. We don't even know what the training camp roster looks like. The draft hasn't happened yet. Maybe we'll go into the draft and it'll end up different than what free agency was, where you came out of free agency saying, oh, things went so well in free agency, they now have the freedom to draft whoever they want with those top three picks, right? And that's kind of the point. There's not much to complain about in the current state that the Bears are in right now. Everything's trending in the right direction because bad things haven't happened yet. Now, I know I'm looking up at the sky every day thinking, oh, is it going to rain today? Is today the day the storm hits? Tornadoes from a Bear standpoint? But until that happens, I just got to take the man at his word.
No, but you can tell it's a different discussion and a different expectation from what you hear this head coach say compared to what you heard with the previous one. Yeah, there's no talk of acronyms. There's no talk about people really loving football, and then your roster reflecting that in really poor ways that counterbalance that.
You know, we play on the hits principle.
The biggest insult, I think, to the head coach was when he talks about what he wanted to see out of his players, and then you see the opposite happen with a guy like Chase Claypool or Nate Davis, and those people didn't seemingly love football.
That's fast.
So I think that matters when it comes to the discussion where the coach is saying, this is what I expect. And when you say accountability, who are you directing it at? What have you seen in games where you're saying this needs to happen? We know that it's somebody, Marshall. He's just not going to say it publicly.
Well, I think this is all because we're coming out of Matt Eberflus, which is one of the lower, if not the lowest of the lows for a head coach in the NFL based on not just his overall disposition and how he made you feel when you were listening to him, but the actions on the field, and then things just snowballed out of control on the way to that losing streak after a 4-2 start. But I go back to, like, before him, Matt Nagy, right? And you wonder, when Matt Nagy was, you know, the guy that was leading them to the playoffs and, you know, getting all the praise, how long did people believe in him before the belief fell off?
I can tell you.
People believe in Ben Johnson right now.
But I can tell you I was there. So there was an appreciation for the transparency. There was an appreciation for the contrast of what he brought compared to John Fox, where you knew the relationship between he and Ryan Pace was strained. But then you saw over the 2018 season, the idea that it was this fart rainbows and ride unicorn season was not the case. There were already flaws in what you saw out of the team in struggling to try to score in the last month of the regular season. He didn't let Tariq Cohen touch the ball but four times in that playoff game where we talk about the double doink. And then they tried to recreate that magic where they never had a playoff win that season for the rest of the time they were here.
So my question then becomes, as I'm watching Ben Johnson and nothing has gone wrong yet, is when would the first sign of something going wrong even be? We got to get to the season, right? Unless they come out of this draft and we just hate the draft picks.
I don't think that's going to happen. Although I do think a lot of the love that we're seeing for Tyler Warren makes me raise an eyebrow, because I feel like his skill set overlaps with Cole Kmet's quite a bit. And I just don't know if you want that positional redundancy on your roster, especially taken with that high of a draft capital, if he's available. I don't feel the same way about bolstering your line.
I'm good with the line talk. I'm good right now with whatever Ben Johnson wants to do, because he's kind of earned a longer leash based on what he's done in Detroit and based on what he feels like his needs are for his offense to be and stay ahead of the curve. Like right now, the offense is trying to get up to par. But what's better than getting up to par is being outstanding. And if Ben Johnson feels like certain players will make his offense not up to par, but outstanding, go get them. Go get them. Nobody's stopping. You're in charge now. You got Ryan Poles with you, and you can get your message across to him. This is what we need for my offense to be dynamic, to have the most dynamic offense in Chicago Bears history.
Been passionately convinced that Ryan Poles is letting Ben Johnson dictate all the player scouting and selection and the talent acquisition. But we just don't have concrete proof of that until we see what happens in the draft. And even then, we might not know.
Well, I think Ryan Poles knows his job is on the line. I think he understands he has blind spots. I think he's admitted to making mistakes in the past and things not working out for him, previous draft picks. So I think he is going to have to lean on, it's a partnership, Ben Johnson, Dennis Allen, to get the players that they need to do what they need to do. Like, it's Ben Johnson trusting Ryan Poles to help him get the players that he needs. That's how I view the whole draft process and even free agency. You know, I listening to those guys talk about the guys that they picked up in free agency, it sounds like this wasn't a Ryan Poles thing or a Ben Johnson thing. It was we talked about it and figured this is the best path forward, is going out and getting these guys. The fact that they use trades as opposed to just going out and getting guys strictly through free agency.
Well, or trying to draft them. And that becomes the question of what do you want to do with that pick at number 10? And we've got 23 days to figure it out. The most surprising part to me is still that no first round pick has been traded up until this point. And given how it normally goes, especially when you're talking about a group meeting where all these people are together, that makes me keep an eye out as well for what may happen as we get closer and closer to that draft day.
Grand Bigs. Bigs time.
Bigs.
With Mully and Haw. Bigs time.
The Bigs Report.
With Brad Bigs.
Bigs time.
Bigsy.
His name is Brad Bigs.
Brad Bigs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long time contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay.
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, we've been talking about the Bears coming out of all their conversations at the owners' meetings, and there are a lot of things to go over. I'm just wondering, Brad, as you heard what was said, as you listened to the various comments, has your opinion of what the way they will draft changed? In other words, do you still believe that the guy that you picked in your first draft will be the guy they take? Do you think they will take the tackle, Will Campbell, or could they try to get a running back, a tight end, some of the things that have been suggested nationally? Do you still feel secure in what you were thinking going in?
Well, no, there's going to be some more mock drafts. I think you got to do a lot of work on Will Campbell, right? You've got to determine how you stack him up and where you see him potentially playing for you. The running back's a fascinating conversation. Ashton Jeanty, I don't know that he's going to make it to 10.
Right.
And you might be able to say that for Tyler Warren, the Penn State tight end. Like, mm-hmm. could the New York Jets draft him before it comes to the Bears? And then you start looking at it and you say, okay, well, shoot, they could definitely use an edge rusher, right? Well, who's there? And are they a fit at 10? So, you know, maybe they're in a situation where they can go most talented player almost regardless of position to improve the football team. And I've heard a lot of people talk about, well, will they get a starter at 10? I'm like, I don't know that this roster is so good that they have a whole slew of guys that you can't replace with the 10th overall pick in the draft, right? I think if you're asking that question, will they get a starter? You might be overvaluing some of the players they have on the roster right now. And really, you know, yeah, it should be a starter unless it's a guy at a position where they play rotationally. Speaking of like the defensive line, and at the end of the day, who's out there for the first snap of the game is not nearly as important as the snap count, the total number of plays played by a guy, and then you know, who's on the field on the money downs, right? If it's first and 10 with 6 minutes to go in the first quarter, that's a lot different than third and two with 3 minutes to go in a two-point football game.
So, Brad, yesterday at the owners' meetings, we heard from Kevin Warren and George McCaskey. And regarding the stadium project, Kevin Warren said the focus is now both downtown in Arlington Heights. And George said that Arlington Heights and reminded people was George Halas's ideal location for a Bears stadium. It seems that the focus has shifted now back to Arlington Heights where they own the land. Just curious, from a timetable standpoint, what are you hearing about what the next step could be, how quickly this all could get going, and is it something that's hanging over or hovering over the organization, because it's been a long time since they closed on this land deal, and it's about time they need to start maybe get going with the project?
Yeah, well, I think to keep the tax certainty that they reached in place, they've got to get the ball rolling in a certain period of time. The focus is now on two locations because they made zero progress whatsoever where their focus was downtown, right? I mean, let's be real here. They're now focused on two locations because they can't get anything going whatsoever in their preferred destination. So now they'll pivot and they'll, you know, yeah, I've said all along, Arlington Heights was the one that made sense, that nothing about the thing in the city made sense. And I think the questions now become financing, right? Because how do you pay for it, right? Like, and the, you know, Bears are going to put up a bunch of money, but it's not going to be enough of money to cover the whole thing. And so then you get into the possibility, which they've now acknowledged, of potentially involving private equity in ownership, which is something I asked them specifically about in October when the Bears made the trip to London and the NFL had kind of gotten the ball rolling with that. Well, how big of a piece of the pie are you potentially looking to move, and what would the valuation of your club be? So how much funding could you get? And I would imagine, or it's at least a possibility, that all of those factors in terms of private equity, anything, would be complicated with their ownership situation, where they, I would think, George is probably trying to consolidate some of the power and the piece of the pie and that type of thing. It, with Virginia's passing, and he talked about, I think one of the things he mentioned at the owners' meeting was, we have to stay together. Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's what he said, and that they being the McCaskies, because you know, if they need to sell some of the team to raise some funding, then they have less of the team. And if there are members of the family that would like to sell, period, does it get more complicated? And there's just a lot of moving parts there.
I'm curious, Brad, when you hear the injury updates that were given a couple days ago for both Jaquan Brisker, who will be ready to go, and I don't know that doesn't mean you still shouldn't invest in that position, or with Braxton Jones, who will not be ready to go. Again, the idea that if you want some competition, we talked about the kind of disparity between wanting him to put on more weight and wanting him to be healthy after ankle surgery. That doesn't seem like one follows the other logically. Does that impact the way you will look at the overall draft? In other words, do they now, they already need a safety? Are you surprised they didn't sign a veteran one? They said nice things about Kieran Amagaji. I don't know that means they believe he could actually play this year if need be. So does that mean that the tackle position still remains high?
Yeah, they could still grab a safety with some experience off the street here.
Right.
I think, and they probably won't make any signings or any signings of real note between now and the draft, because you're at the point now where you're like, hey, let's take a look and see what we come out of the draft with, and then we'll assess where we're at that point. You know, we need to add a couple more players to the 90-man roster. Are there some spots where we're light? Is there a spot where we could use someone with experience to push the group? And then, you know, some of your veterans, and I'm not saying this necessarily about the safety position, but some of the veterans that are out there right now, guys, if they're not being offered, you know, much or anything above minimum
pre-draft, yeah,
they're not gonna, they don't want to sign pre-draft, because right, they don't know what your roster is going to look like after the draft. Right. And they're also not necessarily super fired up about the idea of then volunteering for a voluntary off-season program in April and May and even into June when they're only getting the minimum. So those guys are waiting too. It's not just the team. You know, competition at left tackle, if you're looking for a legit potential starter there because you've got concern about Braxton and about Karan, I probably got to shoot pretty high in the draft, and it's just not a great draft for left tackles. Unless they get a Campbell and they feel like he can play left tackle, or they make something else happen, it looks like you've got maybe a legit competition between Brex and Jones and Karan Amagaji and safety. That's not nearly as concerning to me as I think it is to some people. You can get guys at that position. You saw for years the Bears would draft one in the middle to late rounds, and he'd be a starter every year. And then they'd, well, this was okay, but it wasn't great. And then they'd try it again, and eventually they landed on some pretty decent ones.
So, Brad, back to George McCaskey for a second. He said when asked about the sale of the team and what the rest of the family feels, he basically said he wants to own the team for the next 100 years. He said that before. There also is a possibility of them selling a portion of the team, as we know, because league rules allow them to create some capital to maybe invest in a new stadium project. Those are two separate ideas. But based on people you've talked to, how much interest is there in maybe buying the Bears? Is anybody out there waiting for them to put them for sale? And is that even something that is on their radar right now?
I mean, you put any one of these sports teams up for sale, and they're drawing the attention of people, like I specific individual or group, but like there'll be enough interest. There's no question about that. And a lot of times you'll hear of some wealthy people that want to get involved, and then when others emerge that maybe are more low key in that. That's a stratosphere. I don't know who else in that stratosphere, but there will be no shortage of people. You got a list of names, Dave? Or
no, I was asking what you heard. If you heard anything, I don't have a list of names necessarily. No,
Brad. 30 seconds. Did any of the rule changes, which will be the most impactful in your position?
Well, they want more action on the kickoffs. They feel like they've made the kickoff a safe play, and they feel like in moving the touchback to the 35-yard line will be a real deterrent for coaches to just have their kicker put it into the end zone. So now you're going to have to see. I mean, teams are going to have to cover. They're going to have to get downfield and cover. And so they've added some action back into the kickoff, because the changes they made last year that were in the name of safety did not generate nearly the number of returns that they had kind of initially forecasted.
Great stuff, Biggsy. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Brad.
Have a great day, guys.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
All right, guys, do you think that George McCaskey meant it when he said that he had no plans to sell the team in the wake of his mom's death, a stance he has taken for years? Or do you think that could change? Do you think he speaks for the entire family?
I think that's a question we could not possibly answer accurately, because I don't think there's any way we could possibly know. And yet it is the one that persists, I think, in the minds of people paying attention to this and wondering about the future of the Bears. It's a pivotal time. That's the understatement and the most obvious thing of the day when you're talking about the Bears. It's such a pivotal time, important time in their transition, in their organization's history. They're worth $6.4 billion, according to Forbes. And if you were so inclined to say, all right, this is the opportunity to cash out, max out, I imagine there are some people in that family who are tied to their inheritance, looking at this as an opportunity, And yet there are some, like George, as the way that he projected this, that want to own the team forever. And for the next 100 years is his favorite line. I think they're probably closer to doing that than selling. Some people out there might be tempted to change their mind. You hear the Jeffrey Bezos rumor all the time. You hear other names that come up. There are a lot of teams out there that look at the NFL as an opportunity to make a lot of money. It's a smart investment. I don't think the Bears are inclined to want to do that. I do wonder how difficult, if that's the right word, I do wonder how much of George's time or energy will be devoted to assuring people in the family that it's the right thing to keep the team. I wonder how loud that noise will be, and I don't think we'll ever really know.
Yeah, like you said, David, hard to know now, but do I believe him in the near future that he has no plans to sell the team? I absolutely believe him when he says that. I think he wants to hang on to the Bears as long as possible, him personally speaking. Like you said, things can change based on family members and based on a crazy offer that they could get from like a guy like Jeff Bezos. But at this very moment, do I think that we're close to any type of sale or any type of situation where George McCaskey or the McCaskey family does not have firm control of the Bears? It doesn't feel like that at all to me right now.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think that, you know, George got emotional when he was answering this question about the, you know, he was using a football metaphor about his mother had a game plan and they just have to execute it. And she did. And you know, he also talked about when he was in law school, how there were a lot of people that don't contemplate their own mortality and that end up like at the end of their lives not having come up with a plan as to how they want to distribute what they have. So I think that I've always felt, you know, the McCaskeys had 11 children. And when you talk about big families, I think you talk about any family. There are differing personalities within it, and there are oftentimes different people that don't get along with each other. You know, I think it's always a blessing when you get along with your siblings and when your family is tight, when you know, your children get along, that sort of thing. I think that we see schisms, though, happen in different families. I don't think that's the case here. I think it was laid out pretty good by Mrs. McCaskey as to what she wanted her children to do. And George said, you know, as long as we all stay together, and that's kind of what she wanted. She wants the Bears to be family-owned. And I would imagine that's going to be very difficult beyond this generation, right? Beyond her 11 children, because there are just so many, when you deal with that many kids and their kids and extended families, it's hard to maintain kind of the same opinion on what we should do. And if it's not spelled out for you, it's difficult to do. So I think that there is no danger of them selling immediately. I think it was interesting to hear George talk about considering the idea of getting some outside money in here in order to help with building the stadium, if indeed that's needed. And I mean, you know, already Michael is gone and Tim has also shaken off this mortal coil, but they have children and they would be deserving of as much interest as anyone. I don't know who controls whatever voting shares are out there, but I think that at this point, you go along with what the plan was that Mrs. McCaskey had before you move forward.
You alluded to selling part of the team to create capital so they can maybe invest into the stadium. That, to me, is a separate issue.
Yeah,
right.
You're right.
Because they can maintain majority ownership.
Yes.
They could maintain the McCaskey family hold on the Bears and still do the smart thing, which could be selling a percentage of the team to create capital.
We're talking about like a 10% yes. that the league
what
allows.
What the league allows.
Right.
How
we're not talking about like trying to find a partner.
A corporate new owner or Bezos or somebody like that. No, you're talking about somebody to give them an influx, an infusion of money so they can invest in a stadium and help pay for it themselves.
But I don't know what happens beyond the lifetime of this current generation.
It's impossible to right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. It's Mully and Haw. The number is 312-644-6767. It's Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
You know, it was a good day, a good learning experience for really everybody. I thought that in spots we were really good in terms of complementary football. You know, defense got three turnovers. We scored three times off of those, a touchdown and two field goals, and I thought that was really good complementary football.
Ah! I hate it. I hate it so much.
Why do you hate it, Lila?
It's because okay. It didn't work.
The past happens, and then you learn from the past, and we all learn that the past could be really bad, and, you know, the present's better than the past, and you don't ever want to go to it, back to that in the future. That's how that works. These things happen to shape our knowledge, our experiences, so that we can learn from them and be better going forward, because yeah. We're the coach of the Bears.
Okay, that's all nice and everything, but if I never hear the term complementary football and how the defense can use it when the offense is what drives success in the National Football League, that would be great. I have often talked about how Ben Johnson has changed it up. We've heard hints here and there, right, Marshall, from the previous press conference where he talked about the importance of not being afraid to throw interceptions. I've said many times I felt like Caleb Williams was afraid to throw interceptions, and that's part of the reason he was holding on to the ball too long. It was something he talked about and prioritized after games and press conferences. As if he's going to get paid any differently based on his rookie year, he's not. I don't know where this came from other than his head coach. You know, I understand we all have our personal goals, but that shouldn't be one of them when you're trying to learn your limits as a quarterback and your team has nothing to play for. It was so refreshing to hear Ben Johnson today talk about what he thinks is more important than stupid complimentary football.
So the way I understand it right now from our analytics team, the EPA in the passing game is really one of the most critical factors in determining wins and losses right now. That's probably changed over the last 5 years or so. I would have said 5 years ago, turnovers, takeaways, that was number one. From what I understand now, that EPA for the passing game has now surpassed that. So whatever team has the higher passing game EPA at the end of the game, they generally win that game. It's over 80% of the time. So it's a huge stat, and that's where we look to how do we help inflate that number, higher completion percentage, more run after catch opportunities. That's not to say we're not going to take our shots down the field and look for big explosive plays, chunks or touchdowns that way, but there's a lot of ways we can get that done.
That EPA metric that you mentioned in the past, when did you first become aware of that? How many years does that go back where you put an emphasis on that?
I became more aware of it last season, to start last season. And it was really a 3 to 5 year study over modern football, as I like to call it, the last few years of football.
The last few years of football. Not even the 90s, when you could play football in the containment of perhaps the Score studio, get yourself a 10x10 room or something. Modern football, you know, the thing that they're doing now that is successful. I am all for changing up the rubric and changing up the baseline. And this makes a lot more sense to explain what we're seeing out of the successful quarterbacks in the league and the successful offenses than what we've seen before.
Layla, let's go back. Do you remember last season? It was the only game on at the time. There was a Sunday night football game between the Detroit Lions and the Houston Texans. Do you remember that game?
Yes.
Do you remember how many interceptions Jared Goff threw in that game?
Oh, was that the 4 spot?
That was the 5 spot.
Ah, wasn't there? Oh, the 4 was the playoff game.
Yes. Jared Goff threw 5 interceptions. Do you know who won that game?
The Lions.
Exactly. And I think this all goes into the philosophy where we're going to keep taking shots. We're going to keep going. You know, most teams would fall under the weight of such a performance by a quarterback in a game. But the defense stood tall when it had to, and Jared Goff just kept on throwing. And he got them into field goal position. They got a game-winning field goal from Jake Bates as time expired from 52 yards. And I think this goes into the idea that you can make mistakes – just bring more offense your next time you have the football.
Unlike the White Sox starting pitchers who have had remarkable success and not allowing a run, the best way to also counter that is to hit more. That works.
Losing 1-0 is not a great thing.
Score more. Yeah. Get yourself a torpedo bat. I feel like EPA is the torpedo bat of my football experience right now. That sentence made no sense.
It didn't, but I'm with it. I support you fully in your nonsensical statements that actually do make a little bit of sense if you understand how apples and oranges can both go into your fruit basket.
Throw in a mango or something and we're working. But the point here is, so many times we've heard Ryan Poles talk about relative athletic score. So much so that I'm actually scared that the higher your relative athletic score, regardless of whether or not you fit the team need, is going to be what dictates his draft picks. You know, like Shamar Stewart getting a practically 10 relative athletic score out of Texas A&M. I'm like, you don't even need that position. Or do you? Because you're so in love with that stat. I'm all for understanding how those work in favor of what you're doing. But when they work to a fault, when, for example, Braxton Jones's arm length is in the upper percentile, something like 90, but he doesn't show you in a game how he's blocking well enough. You know, Texter accurately said he's been trying to anchor for 3 years. That's what matters to me. Tape matters to me. When your traits match your tape, you're a top 10 pick typically. So when I hear EPA get thrown into this in a way that makes sense, if you're coaching the don't want to throw an interception out of your quarterback, this is a great way to help build that message.
Also, that's kind of where we were with Caleb Williams the back half of last season, where we wanted him to be more aggressive down the field. And it didn't happen for a variety of reasons. I don't know the exact reason. I mean, I think there was more than one factor at play when you're talking about this. But watching him play and understanding he had that long streak of not throwing an interception, when he finally did throw an interception, I wasn't necessarily relieved, but I was like, okay, and keep going, keep going, keep going. And I think Ben Johnson will be in a position to get Caleb Williams to not only make the easy throws, the time throws, if you will, based on better protection, based on moving the pocket around, based on the routes being run by the receivers, the way it's being schemed up, but also based on an aggressiveness which maybe wasn't on display last year for one reason or another.
I thought that he was conservative to a fault. You want to hit the home run ball, and I understand that. But there's also a death by inches aspect to this, where you just dink and dunk your way down the field, and the next thing you know, you're to the goal line. And there's a balance there, and that relies on your play caller. It relies on your quarterback to trust your play caller, which is something that we have discussed a lot. But when we hear information adding to it, sometimes it's about the translation of information as to how you see it. What's the phrase, for example, that motivates you every day to wake up? Some people have them. And I feel like in this case, this metric, this understanding of how that works and what we see the offense functioning with, you want your quarterback to have that game that you talked about, Marshall. I threw 5 interceptions. I still think I can win this game. It's not going to stop me from throwing a deep ball in a crucial down when I see my receiver is open.
Absolutely. That's the point, right? Is to get your quarterback to a point of confidence and comfort that he knows that just because I made a mistake, it doesn't mean the game is over. Now, if you make a mistake at the end of the game's probably over. But what I'm saying is, by and large, mistakes are going to be made. It's how do I mitigate them and minimize them over the course of a game and by proxy over the course of a season. So, I like it for Caleb Williams. I think he's in a good spot with a good coach. He's got weapons. He may get more weapons when the draft comes up, although it'll be interesting to see what they do at number 10 or if they trade down or even trade up. I that's the wild card for me is I'm so excited about, and you know, the NFL draft is probably my least favorite NFL moment because it takes time, but yeah.
I know. There's a lot to look forward to. We have a lot more coverage coming up